To call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 13th. Let the record reflect the time is 3:15 p.m. Today we have present Representative Wright, Representative Prox, Representative Carrick, and myself, Chair Sumner. Oh, also Representative Ruffridge. The staff that will be assisting us today are Jordan Wright with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and my staff, Clark Bickford, Committee Aide to House Labor and Commerce. We have two bills on today's agenda, House Bill 75 by request of the governor, which we've heard previously, received one amendment before the amendment deadline that we will discuss. We have Lori Winghire, Director of Insurance, online. Lori, please put your name on the record, and if you have any thoughts about the amendment, we'd love if you would share them with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Lori Winghider. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. When this bill first came before House Labor and Commerce, we talked about that we would have an amendment to it. There was some confusion on the language of the original bill regarding additional insurance, and that is what this whole bill is about. The amendment before you, we think, clarifies it to what the intent of the bill is, so maybe a little bit of explanation will help you. If you're a contractor, and let's just use the contractor that builds homes, or you could use a native corporation, or a contractor that pushes dirt. Most contracts that they have, you are required to name the owner of the project as an additional insured. In other words, via the contract, he is getting you to accept the liability for working on his or her project through the contract, and he requires that you name him or her as an additional insured on your insurance policy. The other issue is that we are trying to make it easier for large projects, excess of $50 million, to do owner-controlled or contractor-controlled insurance programs, where every contractor, be it an engineer, be it a general contractor, it doesn't matter what kind of contractor they are, but anyone who would be working on that job site, such as what we just heard today, Willow, if you were working on that site, any contractor would be named on this owner-controlled or contractor-controlled insurance. So the amendment is to clarify that there's two ways an additional insurance could be required, in a term required by contract or during an owner-controlled or contractor-controlled insurance policy. Insurance program. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions. I hope that explains what the amendment does. Again, just to clarify that in those two instances, an insurance policy can be endorsed to name additional insurers.
Thank you, Director Winghire. We would entertain a motion to move the amendment, and then we can discuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment 1.
Object.
Okay, we have objection. Representative Prox.
And thank you. Through the chair, I just want to clarify that with this bill now as amended, the owner of the project and the subcontractors can still be covered as an additional insured on this overarching contract.
Through the chair, Representative Prox, that is exactly right.
Okay. And just to follow up, I have not heard anything back from insurance companies. Has somebody talked to them and they have weighed in on this?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, we have had numerous conversations with insurance companies in Alaska and with insurance brokers.
Okay.
Anybody else? No. Representative Prox, do you maintain your objection?
I do not. They know more about this than I do, so if they're happy, I'm happy.
Okay, seeing no objection, Amendment number 1 passes. Thank you, Director Winghire. We'll set this bill aside until later this week. Next, we have House Bill 58, a bill by request of the governor. Tony Newman, Acting Director of Senior and Disability Services, is here today to present this bill. Please approach and begin your presentation. And put your name on the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Sumner and members of the committee. My name is Tony Newman. I'm the Acting Director at the Division of Senior Disability Services at the Alaska Department of Health, and I'm pleased to be able to present House Bill 58 before you today. I had prepared a slideshow. Do we do slideshows here in House Labor and Commerce?
We can.
Okay.
Brief at ease. The record, and just for the record, Representative Fields joined us at 3:18 p.m. and Representative Sadler joined us at 3:21 p.m. Mr. Newman, you can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that, I've noticed that several of the committee members got to hear this bill in House Health and Social Services, so I'll just be very brief with a reintroduction to the bill. This bill would add to the array of services available under Alaska's Medicaid home and community-based waiver programs. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Medicaid home and community-based waivers, I'm going to give a very quick overview to help set the table about what the bill is trying to accomplish. Where did it go? See here. Just a minute. So this isn't a PowerPoint. We're looking at the web. Gotcha. So I should just scroll through it.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Alaska's home and community-based waivers are a part of Alaska's Medicaid program that allow people with disabilities and seniors to remain in their homes or assisted living settings when they would otherwise need institutional care, such as in a nursing home. Like all Medicaid programs, the waivers are provided through partnership with the federal government, with the feds picking up about 50% of the cost for services and the state picking up the rest. Alaska has 5 waivers aimed at different populations of Alaskans depending on their needs, and they are listed here along with the approximate number of people on them. So you can see our Alaskans Living Independently waiver is the biggest with about 2,200 people. Second is our Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities waiver, serves about 2,000 people. That's the waiver that you may know of as having the wait list. Typical example of someone on our Alaskans Living Independently waiver might be a senior who had a stroke and has limited use of their arms or legs or has had to move into an assisted living home. A person on the Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities waiver could have cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, but who with enough supports is able to stay at home with their parents or in a group home. The idea of the waiver is to not only provide people with more independence and personal choice, but also save the state significant amounts of money that would otherwise need to be spent on a more expensive institutional care option for these folks.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead. Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair, Mr. Newman. Do you mind staying on the slide for a second? The list of the different waiver types. Thank you. I know that we often talk about how providing care in a home or community-based setting is cheaper than an institution. But is that kind of the choice we face for each of these categories?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, yes. The idea for all 5 of these waivers is that they present an alternative to people who would meet the level of care that would enable them to be served in a nursing home or an institution for people with developmental disabilities.
Okay. And could I ask a follow-up? Thanks. I know you also have a list of the types of services and the cost. Is it accurate to assume that people eligible for these home and community-based services will also go to an institution if we don't provide home and community-based services, or how much more complicated is it than that? I don't understand.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, it is a little more complicated than that. Alaska may not have the right institutions for everyone to be able to serve in an institution. So I think a lot of people would just have to make do as best they could in Alaska with the services they are able to get in Alaska without those institutions. But the expectation from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is that the people who are receiving these services would otherwise be able to be served in one of those institutions.
Okay. Thank you.
So let's say that you are enrolled on a waiver. What does that mean? It means you're eligible to receive an array of services, and the menu of Alaska services is listed here. Not all these services are available to every waiver. Some people receive just one service. Some people receive many at once. Some of these services are only provided in assisted living homes. Others can be provided in people's own houses. The one thing that all people on waivers have in common is that they rely on care coordinators to help arrange their support plans and help waiver recipients take best advantage of the resources in their communities. And we're grateful for our care coordinators for and all the people that work to provide these services. These are not state employees. These are people who are self-employed, who work for agencies, large or small, out in Alaska's communities. What House Bill 58 seeks to do is provide the people who are on waivers with a new service option called adult home care that would be offered in a new licensed residential setting type, an adult care home. Our vision is that both the service and the setting will have reduced administrative burdens compared with current assisted living home options, but still ensure the care and safety of the individuals residing in them. So think of someone you know, a neighbor or a longtime friend who has difficulty preparing meals or maintaining adequate nutrition, or is unable to manage daily personal needs such as bathing, dressing, or shopping. Maybe this is a young person with a developmental disability, or maybe it's a senior citizen who's known you all your life. They're getting to the point where they probably shouldn't live alone, but there's no assisted living home option nearby that would allow them to stay in the community that they know and love. Now imagine you own a home with a spare bedroom because your kids are grown and gone, and you have space you could offer this neighbor, but maybe you're not able to provide by yourself all the assistance this person needs. The new option described in this bill are meant for you, for your neighbor, and for you. Informal arrangements for care like this, of course, have been part of our society for a long time. But under this bill, the support provided will ensure safety and as much independence as possible for the recipient and adequate support for the caregiver. The idea for this bill was first brought to the governor's attention by constituents who were serving as foster parents to children with severe disabilities who were aging out of the foster care system. These constituents found there weren't easy ways for them to continue to offer care to these foster children when they became adults. The only real option available to them was to turn their family home into an assisted living home, which would require licensure and several other requirements. In developing a new option for these caregivers, the department realized that a new type of home care setting could potentially be of value beyond those aging out of the foster care system. So this bill extends the possibility of an adult care home to other individuals with disabilities, including seniors, who qualify under the Medicaid Home and Community-Based Waiver Program. As the slide notes, there will be different administrative expectations for adult care homes compared with assisted living homes. There are many things that will need to be worked out if this bill passes that we'll need to work up in regulations. The kind of credentials and training caregivers will need, what the space expectations will be for the homes, what the rate of payment will be, and more. The division will invite a lot of input from our partners, from families, from service providers, from care coordinators, from advocacy groups, and of course, people with disabilities themselves, as well as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in determining the details of the service. And the regulations, once drafted, will go through the public comment process. This bill provides us with a conceptual framework to get all that work started. House Bill 58 is needed because the lack of care options, the growth of Alaska's senior population, and workforce shortages all require that we think creatively and provide more options for people to get the care they need while still living as independently as possible, especially in small communities that likely don't have assisted living homes and other good care options. We're hopeful that adult home care will grow in popularity and ultimately be an attractive alternative, helping make Alaska the best place it can be for neighbors and friends to live and grow older together. That concludes my introduction to the bill to this committee, and I'm happy to walk through a sectional overview or proceed with questions, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, I understand that regulations will have to be developed, but could you give us an idea of the qualifications? I guess I'm thinking of just adults that essentially, until they find a need, are not qualified to meet the need. But once their spouse or their child or maybe even their brother has a need, they can figure out how to take care of somebody, that particular need. Is this sort of certification contemplated?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, yes. We are contemplating and intend to have certification. This would be a CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services expectation, that to be able to provide the adult home care service that you are certified and that you meet administrative qualifications. We do intend for them to be a lower level of qualification than we do right now for our most of our residential living options. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, right now, to qualify for some of our services, you need to have, say, a year's worth of experience providing residential care. Well, if you're are able to consider offering the services, we would look at reducing that sort of expectation that you have experience as a residential manager, maybe some other type of care that you've provided in the past, whether it was child care or something, could also be a substitute for that kind of experience. Again, these are the sorts of things that we will work out through the regulatory process.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you so much, through the chair. I have maybe a good example, and I'm just wondering if you could sort of confirm if it is a good example of what the adult care home could potentially be. I have a friend in Fairbanks who takes care of her nephew full-time. He lives with her at home. And she's provided that care for his entire adult life. So would the adult care home option be a potential for her to receive this kind of support for the work she's already doing? In other words, individuals who maybe live with extended family members or longtime family friends or something like that, and need that full-time care, could they then qualify for the adult care home? And is there anything currently in a situation like that that a person in that situation could apply for as opposed to this? And maybe what are some of the pros of the care home in those situations?
Through the chair, Representative Carrick, without knowing the specific details of your friends, I wouldn't be sure if they would qualify the service. And also, given the fact that we don't have the service stood up yet, I couldn't address that specifically. But that's the kind of situation that we do have in mind for the service. There are living arrangements that could work right now potentially for somebody in that situation. There are group home services. We have family habilitation home services that require licensure as an assisted living home. So one question if I were to speak with these folks, I would ask is, could your home qualify as an assisted living home? The idea of this bill is to create an option for people who have a lower administrative burden to qualify as an assisted living home. And so possibly this would make a better option for those folks.
Just a quick follow-up through the chair. And is there any, with the adult care home, is there any limitation on the caregiver being, or the provider in that situation, being a family member or a close relative? In other words, if you're a parent, for example, and you have an adult child with disabilities or some other kind of situation that requires that care, could you potentially go through the process of having an adult care home? Because this is targeted, my understanding is to 1 to 2 individuals. So if it's just that one child or just that one adult that lives with you, is this maybe a really good option for those folks?
Through the chair, it could be, Representative Carrick. The idea, the sort of the question that's being raised right now is, does the parent of that adult child have a legal duty to support that child currently? Is the parent assigned as a guardian to that child? And we are fielding a lot of questions and interest in lifting regulations, changing regulations to allow people who have a legal duty to respond to a legal responsibility to care for someone to be able to pay to do that. And we are actually exploring that question actively right now. It's come up, would this bill allow someone with a legal duty to care for an individual be able to provide that care and be paid for it through this bill? And that would have to be drawn out and understood through the regulatory process.
Good. And just a quick comment. Anything we can do, there's no lack of need in Alaska for adult care options. And I see this bill as a really positive step forward. So thank you so much for bringing this forward.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Newsom, I guess I want to probe that answer. The question was essentially, can a parent be allowed to care for a child under the adult home care? And the answer you gave was a little bit nebulous to him. I wonder if you can clarify for me, please.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Sadler. Right now, a parent of a minor child has a legal duty to care for that child, as those of us who are parents well understand. Sure. Once the child becomes an adult, the question is who becomes that child's, that now adult's guardian. And if the parents aren't the guardians for the child, they don't have a legal obligation to support that adult child, and they could be paid to provide care for that child. But typically, as you can imagine, often when a child with disabilities becomes an adult with disabilities, often the parents are the most familiar with them, and they'll be assigned guardianship of that adult child. So unless a court decides otherwise, Alaska regulation prohibits a parent who is a guardian of an adult child from providing the services that the division administers.
So that's a no. Good deal. Very good.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, Director Newman, why haven't we done this in the past?
Through the chair, Representative Wright, I think the answer would be, first, home and community-based waiver services are not that old in terms of being around in states. I think it's been a couple of decades. We've been able to deliver services through assisted living homes, turning homes, residential homes into assisted living homes through the licensure process. It's been working fairly well, but there's always a need. As Representative Carrick mentioned, there's always a need for more care options. And I think as the workforce shortage has gotten worse, this begs looking for new options for care.
Well, look, are you aware of the military and how they've been doing this? I believe they have a similar program where the spouses are taking care of their husbands and or wives after they're disabled.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Wright. It's called the Veterans Choice Program, and I have been speaking with the representative from the Veterans Administration about that and how it could be applied in Alaska, and we're engaged in conversations and trying to figure that out. That is, how to allow people who would otherwise have a legal duty to support it, or a spouse or a parent of a minor child, how to enable them to be paid to provide care is a question that's getting a lot of scrutiny right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Newman, you can proceed with your sectional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For House Bill 58, Section 1 adds a new section to Alaska Statute 4707, declaring that the state shall pay for adult home care services for an individual at a daily rate set by the department in regulation for individuals who are on Medicaid, who are at least 18, enrolled in a home and community-based waiver, if the individual support plan is approved for adult home care services, and if the person providing the services to the individual holds an adult home care license. This section also allows individuals to receive habilitative and rehabilitative care in addition to the adult home care services and directs the department to adopt regulations setting a rate for the service, establishing standards for operating an adult care home, and establishing a procedure for transitioning an individual from a licensed foster care home to a licensed adult care home. Section 2 amends AAS 4732-010 subsection B to add a new entity, adult care homes, that shall be subject to the centralized licensing functions of the department. Section 3 adds a new section to Alaska Statute 4733 that defines the conditions under which the department may license an adult care home. Section 4 amends AS 4732-900 subsection 2 to add adult care homes to the list of settings that are not defined as assisted living homes. Section 5 amends Alaska Statute 4732-900 to add a definition of an adult care home, meaning a licensed home, not a business site, in which the adult head of household resides and provides 24-hour care on an ongoing basis to eligible individuals. Section 6 amends uncodified law by adding a new section requiring the Department of Health to submit for approval by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services an amendment to the state's medical assistance plan waivers or demonstration waiver as necessary to allow eligible individuals to receive adult home care services and other long-term care services that are not duplicative. Section 7 amends uncodified law by adding a new conditional effect notification section. And Section 8 provides for an effective date for any portion of Section 1 as the date of the reviser of statute receives notice from the Commissioner of Health.
Sure. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Mr. Newsom. In Section 1, my question is, does the bill make the transition of an assisted living license into an adult home care license contingent on it being to care for the same individual, or can that be for a different individual? I just wonder if there's that limitation.
Through the Chair, Representative Sadler, Section 1 of the bill speaks to transitioning a child foster home, to an adult care home. So this was the piece of the bill that the governor was particularly interested in, making a more streamlined transition for people who are caring for children as foster care licensees to caring for adults in this adult care home setting.
And so, therefore, through the Chair, to clarify, Mr. Newsom, so it is contingent on it being for the same individuals. The care to be provided for the same individuals is a condition of that ease of transition from the foster home license to an adult home care license. It's got to be for caring for the same person or two people.
Through the Chair, that was the way it was envisioned, yes.
And that's where the bill's written, right?
I believe so, yes.
Representative Fields.
Thanks. Through the Chair, Mr. Newman, 24-hour oversight in the bill, does that mean all hours and all minutes of a 24-hour day, or do you envision that having the flexibility that if this is a family situation, someone might make a grocery run and come back and not have care for an hour? How do you see the degree of specificity with that language?
Through the Chair, Representative Fields, that's a great question. That's one of the things that we would need to work out through the regulatory process. The most exciting or the interesting part about the bill to me is what services that will allow to be accompanied by the adult home care service. That is, will personal care be allowed in addition to the service that the living caregiver is providing? Will other sorts of services be also eligible for the person who's receiving adult home care services to support the caregiver?
And through the Chair, presumably they could be under the structure of the bill, right?
Through the Chair, yes, they could be.
Okay. If I could ask another question, a little unrelated. Do you think this bill can help us get down a little deeper through the IDD wait list? Does it have that potential by expanding the number of people who might be able to sort of reasonably provide care?
Through the Chair, Representative Fields, It would have to be in a very long range sort of way. We don't quite know how much this new service and setting would be taken advantage of, and we are prepared to. The fiscal notes describe us adding one staff at our division, and one staff at the Division of Healthcare Services to oversee the licensing and monitoring of the setting function, and the Division of Healthcare Services also has planned a second staffer out the road. Out in the out years, assuming the service is a popular one. So at this point, it's difficult to say whether there would be enough of a, say, cost savings that would allow more people to be served on the IDD waiver.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Mr. Newsom. So looking at your graphic, I'm impressed that the same that a person transitioning, a transition from assisted living to adult care home, all four waivers currently available under assisted living license would be available under adult care. That's a good savings for the state. That seems a little unusual. Was that, I'm not sure what my question is there really, but just a comment, that seems to be a very great way to provide some flexibility, yet still maintaining the pipeline of resources and money to provide the services available through waivers. Ordinarily, my experience is that transitioning lends the opportunity for a big jump in cost, but this does not require that jump in costs. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's right. In trying to determine whether this cost would be more expensive or less expensive than existing service options, we realize it could be a bit of both. That is, there may be people who are residing in nursing homes because they don't have any good alternatives, might be able to take advantage and therefore save the state money. On the other hand, might be people who are making do without the services they should be getting. And so we decided it didn't make sense at this point to assume either a cost savings or an increased cost for the Medicaid services component under this bill.
And of course, through the chair, the baseline, the fallback to all these is an institutional level of care at high expense of the state, right?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Sandler.
Okay, thank you, Acting Director Newman. We will move on to public testimony. Please limit your testimony to 2 minutes. So we'll open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wanting to testify on House Bill 58? No? Looks like online we have Jamie. So Jamie Kokoska. Sorry if I mispronounced your name. You can go ahead and put your name on the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. To the chair, my name is Jamie Kokoska, and I'm a program coordinator, too, with the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. I'm here to represent the Council on House Bill 58 and Senate Bill 57 in support of adult home care because of my prior work at the Office of Children's Services. I won't repeat all of the things that Director Newman has just shared, but as far as the history behind this bill regarding foster care, I just want to highlight, since I only have 2 minutes, when I first encountered the need for adult home care license option at OCS, I thought somebody was joking with me, because when you run into this problem in real life, it just sounds completely unreal about what happens to kids when they're aging out of the system and they have this problem. So you click and you realize that there is clearly an oversight in the law regarding youth with developmental disabilities that needs some correcting, and the council is requesting that this be fixed. It's already difficult for youth in foster care to find an appropriate placement and a good home match that meets their needs due to a lack of available homes. And the same is true for the adults who are seeking appropriate assisted living homes. An adult home is not going to become magically available when the youth turns 18, and neither is a public guardian. The current wait time for the public guardian is around 6 months to a year because of the high backlog of cases. And OCS at this time has been asking foster parents to continue providing care for these youth without any foster care stipend or supports to help cover the cost of the care of their needs. They've also been requesting the courts to extend custody for these youth in order to keep them off the streets or returning back to the people who caused them harm in the first place. The average 18-year-old in high school is not ready to leave the home, let alone the youth in foster care on a Medicaid waiver with a high adverse childhood experience score. A foster parent can apply to become an assisted living home, but the process is much more difficult than the foster care licensing when they're already providing this care. So right now, these are the options to ensure that individuals' needs are met and that they're safe unless the legislature approves the adult home care licensing bill. This option fills the gaps and meets the needs, and if this option is passed, the council stands ready to assist and provide input to the state on any proposed rules and regulations to support adult home care options. And thank you for the time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Mrs. Kokoska. And as always, please feel free to send a copy of your written testimony as well. We can put it on the record. Sounds like possibly you had done some reading. Next, we have Michelle Geralt, Executive Director of Hope Community Resources. Mrs. Geralt, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michelle Giroux, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Key Coalition of Alaska, a statewide nonprofit advocacy group made up of Alaskans with disabilities, their families, and those that support them. I'm also the executive director of Hope Community Resources, a nonprofit organization supporting Alaskans with disabilities in six regions of the state. Both the Key Coalition and Hope Community Resources examine any proposed policy or practice to see if it aligns with the developmental disability shared vision, which is in state statute. This vision states, Alaskans share a vision of a flexible system in which each person directs their own supports based on their strengths and abilities toward a meaningful life in their home, their job, and their community. Our vision includes supported families, professional staff, and services available throughout the state now and into the future. We are in support of HB 58 as it proposes to provide additional flexibility and choice to Alaskans with disabilities and their family members. We look forward to partnering with the Department of Health staff to help operationalize this outlined concept of support that will give Alaskans additional choice and provide better options, particularly for those Alaskans in rural communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I see no more people online for public testimony. We'll do a last call. Anybody in the room? Oh, Representative Sadler.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I might ask a question of the last testifier, Ms. Giroux.
Ms. Giroux, Representative Sadler has a question for you. Go ahead.
Through the chair, Ms. Giroux, my question is this. Would this specific legislation benefit Hope Community Resources? Is this a license that any of your company might avail yourselves of, or is this or not?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think the benefit is to those that we serve. I can testify, as Jamie did earlier, that we have seen foster parents of minors give up those children as they're transitioning to adulthood because of the administrative burden of transitioning to an assisted living license. And this option would provide better continuity of care for that youth who is, although 18, is certainly not an adult, with a disability in maturation and support, staying with their family for much longer would be so beneficial to them. And we've also seen from the senior community an option for seniors to have that kind of care. It's non-habilitative. I think many people may choose. They just want support. They don't want to be habilitated, which the traditional waivers tend to focus on. And so we see this as an advantage and a potential cost savings to the state as well.
If I may follow up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rowe, just can you comment generally on the kind of care provided in an assisted living home that has multiple residents versus an adult care home, which might just have one or two residents? Help me understand how they would operate, the level of care. Just help me understand kind of viscerally what it would mean, one versus the other.
Well, I think the level of care, in terms of what the person needs may be similar, but it's the difference of family life when you're raising your children and how the flow of the household might go and who owns the home as opposed to an assisted living home that might be owned by an entity such as an organization. There are far more regulatory burdens in assisted living than I think are potentially proposed. We don't know all of the regulations that would come with this, but I think the idea was to have it be a little bit more family-like and a little bit easier than the traditional assisted living home that's more formalized in its operation and care.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Mrs. Giroux. So is there last call for public testimony in the room? No? Okay, so seeing nobody, we will close public testimony. That concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we'll adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 3:55 p.m.